This is Phil Farron. Driving home. It's Thursday today. I think this is episode 678, something like that. Enjoyed having the family together last week and chatting with them about what had been going on. So it's been a good week. Everything's puttering along. I was able to get the cover built this week for book 16 and took pictures of the kids and put them on the cover, got that all taken care of. And so that all went fine. Got the beta books ordered. I think my roster is full for beta readers for book 16. I actually have potentially four new beta readers that are coming in on book 16. So we'll see how this goes. I have warned them, earthy and gritty. So we'll see how this goes. But anyways, so those books are ordered. They're supposed to be in April 3rd or 4th, sometime in there. We'll get those shipped off. I've already shipped off a couple of PDFs, a Kindle file to some of my beta readers. So that's all cool. Got all the kind of deployment stuff that I normally do there taken care of. So tonight and tomorrow, during the day, probably, maybe even on Saturday, I might just dedicate that to costumes, and then on Sunday I might kick in and start working on book 17. So I'm not exactly sure where we're going with book 17, but you know what? We've done this in the past, and it has opened up, and we're fine. So it is a whole new series of books, so we're kind of at a reset point, because the first book of the second set of books was certainly a reset point. And definitely with the events of this book, it's a reset point. Of book 16, it's a reset point. So there's stuff to work with there. So we'll see. It'll be exciting. 8 more books to go, and then we've got this series wrapped up. So I'm thinking about taking the next couple of days for costumes because I have a lot left to do in terms of the costumes for this year. And also, I think I've mentioned the April Fool's stuff coming up a week from tomorrow. There's a lot of planning involved with it. There's a lot of pieces in play, and so I really need to kind of batten down the hatches on that. I've got all the prep done that I need to, but I just need to make sure I've got all the punch lists and everything. I actually do have, I'm gonna have to make a punch list on this one to make sure that I have all the things done that I think I should get done and a timeline mapped out. So yeah, I know it all sounds very mysterious, but whoo, it's gonna be, we'll see. I have some practicing I need to do in terms of just things that I need to get mechanically in my fingers that I can quickly run through and make it look like it's second nature. So we'll see. It'll be good. Family's good. Work is good. We got things done this week that needed to be get done. We are having small groups tonight, so as soon as I get home, I'm going to have to get inside and get some vacuuming done and see what else my beloved needs assistance with. But that'll be fine, you know. Always look forward to getting together with our small group and discussing things of the Lord, so I'm expecting that to be a good session tonight. I need to look up and find out what it's even on. I usually kind of print out the questions ahead of time and kind of glance through them to figure out what we're talking about, but I'm sure it'll be fine. Anyways, so this week I came back to a topic that I have talked about in the past, but with a little different spin on it now. And this was all reinforced by a breakfast that I had on Saturday with a friend I had met at Walmart, specifically because of the costumes. And from a breakfast I had this morning with a friend. And, like I said, it's a little bit different twist on things that I had in the past, but basically the friend that I met with on Saturday, good guy, really good guy. He's been married twice before. He has not been married now for the last 15 years, but, you know, I mean, he's kind of dated around a little bit and that kind of thing, but, you know, really hasn't kind of settled in, and I think is not really that interested in settling in. He actually is in this area because his son is going to Evangel College, and he actually came down with his son. He just transferred with Walmart, transferred down here. He's down here while his son is attending Evangel University, and then when summer comes, he'll transfer back up there, and they'll just head back up there, and da-da-da-da-da-da. So, I've enjoyed talking to him at Walmart, and finally, at one point, I just said, hey, buddy, we should go to breakfast. So we did. We had a really, really lovely breakfast, and talked about this, that, and the other, and kind of gave him the crash course of my attitude or my beliefs towards life and flesh and the spirit and gender relationships and like that and like that and like that. He seemed very receptive to all of that, and it seemed like it answered some questions for him. But in the process of thinking about all of that, I had been thinking as well about the relationship of the flesh and the spirit to our basic biological subsystems. Because the really interesting thing about this life is that we are operating on a substrate that is common among many, many forms of life here on the planet. Obviously, we have less in common with plants, or maybe we just don't realize that we don't have less in common with plants, but certainly it seems like we have less in common with plants than we do with animals, and we have less in common with insects and bees and bugs and those type of things than we do with mammals. But certainly there is commonalities, and these subsystems, this substrate that we're built on, is a substrate that is governed by chemicals, hormones, and amazingly complex processes. But they aren't necessarily processes that are driven, as far as we know, by mind. Because dogs and cats and dolphins and whatever, the base processes that are working there are all chemicals and really interesting protein stuff. And so that's kind of where we are. So we have subsystems. We have a thirst subsystem that tells us when we really need to get something to drink. We have a hunger subsystem that tells us when we need food. We have a reproductive subsystem whose whole job it is to make babies, and a pleasure subsystem that rewards us when we do the things that the subsystems want us to do. And we have an anxiety subsystem, and we have all those subsystems. And those subsystems are not evil in themselves. They simply help us to survive in the world. They exist. They operate well. They function. And they do their jobs. And we've got 7.5 billion of us on the planet now, and so they do their jobs pretty well. My kind of new way of thinking about things, at least I think it's a new way, is that these subsystems, in whatever inputs they give us, aren't really moral. They're not really good or evil. They just exist. I think what happens, however, is that when there is that input, when there is those inclinations, the flesh then can camp onto those things and amplify them with descriptions and with conclusions. Wow, there's all kinds of cars at the church. Huh. There is a funeral tomorrow. Maybe they're prepping for the funeral. Or maybe it's, visitation for the funeral. We had a firefighter in one of the local fire departments die. And so there's a big funeral tomorrow for him at the church. So I think maybe they're doing visitations. So I think the flesh camps onto those things and then spins up a narrative on top of those things, which is usually a deceitful narrative, and then it amplifies those things based on a deceitful narrative and the lies that it's telling us so that it can have an even greater impact on us so that we can engage our minds, and then our minds then influence those subsystems and can amplify and escalate. Because while those base subsystems can operate without mind, they nonetheless can be influenced by mind. And so, for instance, if you see, from a guy's perspective, if a guy, you know, sees a pretty girl, his subsystem may respond to that, but in my mind, unless he dwells on that and turns that activity into lust, those are two different things. We, as guys, are aware of those entities in our lives that our base subsystems judge as having reproductive value. But at that point, the flesh then can spin up a narrative around that idea of reproductive value and can amplify that and then turn that into lust that then becomes destructive. So there's a couple of different ways that you can fight against that. One of them is to pay attention to when there is whatever that surging of emotions is, be it anger, be it lust, be it fear, be it greed, those kind of things. And as I have said often in the past to friends, when you feel that inside you, then you need to slow down and you need to say what... Yeah, they've got a sign up. Wow, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. They're going to close the route. I guess for the funeral. Goodness. So they're going to close this little stretch here, but there's a side way you can get around for the funeral. So what I have said in the past is that if you feel that surge of emotion within you, and it's definitely a negative emotion, you can count on the fact that there's a lie underneath that. And if you can expose what the lie is, you can unravel that. Because if you figure out what lie you're being told, for instance, in the example of our pretty woman, if the flesh tries to spin up lust in you, the truth of the matter is that she is just not an object. She's just not a tool for you. She has her own life. She potentially has husbands. She potentially has children. She potentially is just trying to move forward in life. And if you rehumanize her by then saying she is not just a tool, she is in fact a valuable human being who is loved by God, then you can knock down that surge of lust. And you can especially do it easily in that type of a context by just doing things like blessing, where you say out loud, "I thank you, my God, that you have placed such beauty in the world, and I just pray for this young woman," or, you know, whatever, middle-aged woman, that you would bless her today, that if she is a wife, that you, her and her husband would have a wonderful relationship together, that if she is a mother, that you would give her wisdom to know how to raise her children in the fear and knowledge of you, etc., etc. You just bless out loud. And I've found that's very effective in unraveling any lies that the flesh might tell you. I've talked many times about times when I have been very anxious for a rollout, and then I've started praying and reminded myself that nothing that happens in the day of the rollout is going to make God love me any less. That he will love me the same today as he loves me this evening. It doesn't matter whether I'm a hero or disgraced, that God's love will remain constant. And if his love remains constant, we can get through anything. So that is a technique that comes sort of top down. So you feel the surge from underneath, and then on that surge, windshield wipers coming on. On the basis of that surge, then you expose the lie that has this flesh has spun on top of whatever anxiety or lust or whatever that's sitting underneath, and you can diffuse it that way. But recently I've been thinking about the flesh and what it works with, and it seems to me that mostly the flesh does just work with these base systems. And this was one of the things that I was talking to my friend on Saturday about, and he brought up, well, what about, you know, greed? So how does that work off of a subsystem? And I said, well, it came up again today for breakfast, and I said, well, I think there might be a couple of things in there. Perhaps one of the ways that greed is spinning up off of a subsystem is that we all know as guys, when we think about getting wealthy, one of the first things we think about is, yeah, I could be wealthy and then I could have all the women I wanted. There might be a tie back in there to the reproductive subsystems. And there might also be a tie back into just plain old anxiety and safety. Well, if I was wealthy, then I would be safer and I could do what I wanted and I could get what I wanted and my life would be substantially better. But whether or not all of the flesh's attacks against us trace back into a subsystem, I think it is also potentially true that we can take ammunition away from the flesh by bringing some discipline to our subsystems. So we can take an example of the hunger subsystem. If you allow the hunger subsystem to get out of control, and you're constantly eating food that is not necessarily good for you, high caloric in terms of cheap calories, like processed foods, processed carbohydrates, and those then throw your system out of whack so that you're just feeling terrible all the time, well, the flesh can take that feeling of grunge that's within you and accuse you of all sorts of things and get grumpy about all sorts of things. And potentially, if it can drive you then into having such an excess of calories that you start packing on weight, and then that weight emits more cortisol into your system and causes an abundance of stress hormones in your systems that then raises your anxiety level, then of course the flesh can camp onto that and use that as well. Whereas if you order your diet in such a way that your body is getting what it needs under normal circumstances. I understand that there are conditions, medical conditions that people have that make this much more difficult, and there are all sorts of ramifications to this. But certainly losing weight, I've seen this over and over again, certainly losing weight improves people's attitudes towards life, gives them more energy, makes them feel better, and then out of that, I think, diminishes the lines of attack that the flesh might have. In the same way, when we're looking at the reproductive systems and that response that we as men have towards visually attractive women and the potential for that to twist into lust, in the same way, as I have said over and over and over and over and over and over again, you know, if you are managing your sperm count and keeping it low, that spinning into lust will be diminished. Because that question that's running in the back of our heads all the time as men, can I have sex with it? That the volume of that question is lessened if your sperm count's lower. And so one of the ways you can deal with the flesh's attempt to push you towards lust is simply to manage your sperm count, because the principle is you're managing the base subsystem and you're taking away the energy and the ammunition that the flesh has to try to get you off track. I'm checking my mail, getting my mail, one moment. So, you know, that's kind of just another way to look at this activity of the flesh in our lives. What are the things that we can do to help diminish the influence of the flesh in our lives? And I think we can attack it from both directions. We can do what we can to get our base subsystems tuned and in order and functioning well, and that would help quiet down those voices. And then in addition to that, we can also identify whatever the lies are that the flesh is telling us and diminish the volume there as well. What one of the things that kind of brought this all to the forefront for me was the conversation that I had on Saturday, because I was just talking to my buddy and I thought I'd cover all the standard stuff, and you know, we were on the topics of the challenges of relationships because of the fear-lust continuum, and where men normally gravitate towards lust and women normally gravitate towards fear, and what that means in relationships, et cetera, et cetera. And then at one point I told my buddy, I said, you know, honestly, I'm so grateful to be married right now, because I have made a commitment. I will live in that commitment. And I love being married. I love being married to my wife. And I said, if I was having to start over again now, I said, oh, boy. I said, I can't imagine how I would go about choosing. And at that point, I just kind of got checked in my spirit. And I thought, well, okay. Maybe I need to talk to him about this. Because in that manner of tuning the activity of the flesh in our lives when connected to our base subsystems and specifically the reproductive subsystem, one of the things that benefits that we have as men is that when there is an ejaculation for men, there's an immediate change in attitude. So you're going along, you're all hot and bothered, and then boom, you know, it's like it just lifts. And I think one of the things that does for men is it helps us to kind of step back and get some separation and say, oh, that was just my reproductive subsystem. That's not really me. It's just a subsystem that had control of me for a little bit. And that, I think, allows us to find some separation and understand who we are. As I have talked in the past, it appears from the research I have done that there is a corresponding event in women when it comes to orgasms. And specifically, there is a type of orgasm that makes all the anxiety stop. I've heard testimonies from women on this. And that's a very interesting thing because for me, it establishes a parallel then. So there is a corresponding experience in women that can make all the anxiety stop, all the criticism stop, all the doubts stop, all the anxiety stop. And if that's true, then that provides the same type of reflection that it does on the man's side, on the male side, which is really valuable, I think. And so I talked to my buddy about that. And in the process of talking about all that this week, there was a new special that came on Netflix as well. I can't say that I really recommend the special because it's pretty earthy in plenty of spots. But, you know, it's, for me, it's worth watching. It was called The Principles of Pleasure, and it's very much from a female perspective talking about the role of pleasure in our lives. It's a three-part episode. The first one is talking about the body and just the physicalities of pleasure in the female body, and then the second one is about the mind and the role that the mind plays in pleasure for women, and then the last one is relationships. And it impressed on me again, this may be a completely radical idea, but it impressed on me again how I feel like we as the church, as followers of Jesus Christ, should be able to use this information to help us live fuller and more abundant lives in Christ. That we should glory in His creation and in the gifts that He has given us, and that we should educate our children in their bodies and in the potentials that have been given to them. And if we educated them into what these base subsystems are and how the flesh is going to try to abuse them and the lies the flesh is telling them, would we not be better served by our children understanding these things? Would we not be better served by our young men being able to keep their sperm counts low? You want a radical idea. Here we go. Would we not be better served by teaching our young men how to keep their sperm counts lower so they could contend better with lust? And would we not be better served giving our young women tools so that they could control their anxiety? Now, how does that ever happen? Because there's tremendous back pressure that's going to come, A, from the reproductive systems, because those reproductive systems want to make babies. And then, of course, the flesh is going to camp on top of that and spin this up, because there's such energy in those reproductive systems. It's going to spin this up and just shove and shove and shove and shove women away from this concept of this is your body and you should be free to do with your body what you wish. And one of the things that I came away with watching this Principles of Pleasure series, and again, you know, it's pretty rough in spots to watch just in terms of a good Christian boy. But one of the things that I came away with again and again and again, how that the blame and the fault for women saying that they struggle with pleasure is often laid outside themselves. Well, it's societal demands. Well, it's, you know, the patriarchy. Well, it's white supremacy. Well, it's, and all those things are in there. Well, it's expectations that people have of me. And, you know, well, it was my parents did this. And when really, I think what's happening is that the flesh is just spinning up all sorts of lies on top of the reproductive systems, that the flesh is doing that to keep men and women from discovering that there is a way to quiet those subsystems. And in the process of quieting those subsystems, reduce the amount of energy that the flesh can bring to bear on our lives to create destruction. So I've been thinking about there a lot, and it, I just don't know quite what the path forward could ever be for us, but I just think it's sad that we as followers of Jesus Christ cannot embrace the fact that we are fearfully and wonderfully made, and that God has granted us tremendous gifts. And in his kindness, he's given us these amazing subsystems, and that they can be used to give us a full and joyful life, and can be used to war against the flesh within us, and can be used in a way that is pure and holy, and maybe not in ways that we would first conclude simply because the flesh is lying to us. But I don't know how we disseminate that knowledge. And maybe, I don't know. Maybe there's a book in here somewhere that I need to write that it can be ignored as much as my other books are. Because I've had conversations with significant women in my life. And, whew, it's a difficult case to make, simply because there is so much anxiety and noise surrounding these issues. But I remain convinced that Jesus Christ would not have designed a system that creates babies in large measure driven by anxiety without also creating an additional subsystem that provided relief from that anxiety. I just can't imagine that Jesus would do one without the other. And I don't think he has. But as to how we make that information known and encourage people to move in those directions, that's a whole other discussion. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.